The reviews are in, and we're going to tell you what they are. He's Todd Vandenberg. I'm Rob Steele. Spell his name correctly or AT&T will sue you. Sorry, that's a pre-pro joke. Okay, so I want to start off with, because last week, was it last week that I did Cats?
Yes.
It was last week.
I'm sure it seems like an eternity, but it was last week, yeah.
I owe an apology to Cats, because my wife watched American Idol this week. You're taking a drink. I don't know why you're taking a drink. It's going to be a spit take in a minute. And my wife and I found something much worse than Cats. There was a dark-skinned man wearing a suit containing the entirety of the visible color spectrum. And he got together with this white-haired androgynous being. And the man played random notes on a piano while the two of them sang other random notes that were in direct contrast with what was, and I'll use this term loosely, being played on the piano. Now, the judges loved it, and for the life of me, I cannot figure out why. To me, it sounded like if Jackson Pollock and Salvador Dali got together for a painting, this is what it would have sounded like. I mean, it physically hurt. So,
you're right,
you know what? I'm sorry. Cats is not the worst thing I've heard this year. American Idol came back and went, that's our crown, thank you.
Yeah, but people just randomly showing up on American Idol, that's a little less of an investment than Cats was, so.
Yeah, but God, it was painful.
That's part of the joy of American Idol, though, is listening to people sing that can barely speak.
No. No, it's not. My ears bled. But to fix this, and I know this is not the way I'm supposed to phrase it. Good news about the coronavirus. See, that's not good news. Nine Inch Nails. We'll get to movies in a minute. Give me time. We're starting the show slowly. Nine Inch Nails released two albums for free this past week.
Wow.
If you remember, God, it was about 10 years ago, I guess. They released a series of albums called Ghosts. Four of them, Ghosts 1 through 4. Now, Ghosts 5 and 6 are out and available from nineinchnails.com. It's nin.com. Free download. So, yay. Let's see. Bad news out of the coronavirus. Wonder Woman was bumped at least 2 months. Are you shocked? I'm not shocked.
I'm kind of shocked it's only 2 months. I mean, we're not the health show, but here's the thing about the coronavirus, and this is what really makes me so pissed off about people saying, it's just a headache, and oh, it's nothing to worry about. And it's like, okay, so it's tracking, according to all the models that the people who knew what the hell they were talking about early on said, it's doubling every 3 days. Cases are doubling every 3 days.
Yeah.
Right now, as of Friday night, we're at 101,000 cases. That means in 3 days, we'll be over 200,000, in 6 days, over 400,000, 9 days, 800,000. 12 days.
Actually, 2, 4, 8.
1.6 million.
I mean, yeah, it's ridiculous.
15 days, 3,200,000 cases. That's 2 weeks away, 2 weeks and 1 day away from 3.2 million cases. Another 3 days, that's over 6 million. Another 3 days, that's over 12 million. That's how science works. That's how math works. And I don't care who you support politically. Those are facts. That's how this happens. That's why it's a crime that people have overlooked this and made light of it and aren't following guidelines like staying home unless they have to go out. And by the way, don't wear gloves all damn day. It's like people who wear gloves for actual purposes, as in medical situations,
change them frequently.
They change them all the time. It's all about cross-contamination. When you put on your damn gloves, when you leave your house and you touch all kinds of things on the way to the grocery store, and you pick up things at the grocery store, and you handle the money, and you go home, and you have the damn gloves. Like, no, that's not how gloves work. And the same thing with your masks. It's like, same thing. Masks are changed between every patient. At least they used to be. Now we're running out because morons have hoarded them. So, you know, I'm doing this all wrong. Like, pay attention to what the guidelines actually are. You know, New York City actually did some very severe restrictions. And the rate is slowing in New York City. It's still growing, but it's not doubling every 3 days anymore like it was. Problem is, it's still growing. So,
you want some good news about masks?
Stop ignoring this shit. Yes, everyone would like some good news.
I've got some good news about masks. And this is kind of weird. As a response to the coronavirus directly, Pornhub has is now offering its premium services for free. They have changed their name to Stay Home Hub and are donating 50,000 surgical masks to medical workers in New York and to the, was it the Uniformed Firefighters Association of New York City's local 2507. So Pornhub is being helpful.
Oh. Well, they would probably say they've been helpful for quite a while now. Yeah, that is a very cool story. It would be nice if our federal government would get in line and start doing some of the things and stepping up, like not delaying orders for ventilators because, oh, we don't think you really need that many.
We don't think you need, right. He thinks.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, back
Let's
to movies.
Let's do some lighter news. Space Jam 2 is still on track to come out in June. Yeah, I read that a couple days ago, and I don't know. And I was
they might as well release it now.
Actually, apparently LeBron wants to, but there's some stuff that they're still working on, and it's one of the few films that is still being currently worked on. And I thought,
that's really weird.
There's going to be contamination here somewhere with the virus and stuff, but then I thought about it. It's animated. LeBron's done filming, so they're doing all the animation stuff from home studios. Everything's fine. That's a film that can be worked on. I get that. Something I don't get, however, is the new, I'm going to call it a Netflix series, because I think that's what it is, led by Ryan Reynolds, based on the 1983, I think it was, video game Dragon's Lair.
Oh, really?
For those of you who remember it, it was not a traditional video game. It was a Laserdisc video game, so it was looked beautiful.
Yes.
But it was a cartoon. It was a choose-your-own-adventure cartoon. You didn't, I've got to move my spaceship left, now right, and shoot, and shoot. It was a, you get to this point in the game, do you go left or right? Bink.
And animation was done by Don Bluth, who did The Secret of NIMH. He's a longtime Disney animator. So, I mean, it's good as like any of the classic Disney things. Yeah, it's awesome. Although, if you made one wrong move, you were dead, which is why it made gazillion dollars at the arcade.
It was the first game I saw that was more than a quarter.
Yeah. First one I saw too, yeah. Awesome game, but oh my God, it was hard. But it looks beautiful. Very comic. I can totally see why Ryan Reynolds would be cast for this.
Here's my problem with it, though. What's the point? Because if you just watch a run-through of the game, it already is a movie.
True.
You know,
but now it'll be a movie with Ryan Reynolds. And besides, are you seriously asking what's the point when we've had movies made of emojis?
It wasn't good.
They'll make movies of anything, clearly.
I know, but I'm just saying.
I know what you're saying. Watching a run-through of the game? Yeah, because it is.
Actually,
it's a movie.
You know, watching a run-through of the game is actually kind of fun.
Yeah.
Because this was it was very beautifully animated and everything, but still. Anyway, speaking of, you mentioned Disney looking like, because of, what's his name? God, my brain just went, nope, done. Speaking of Disney, Lilo and Stitch showed up on Disney Plus, as one would expect.
Yes.
But part of it was changed.
Yes.
Some eagle-eyed viewers noticed that there was a scene where Lilo is being chased around her house, and she goes and she hides in a tumble dryer. Well, the tumble dryer has been changed to a table with some space under it and a pizza box. And the concept behind this, I get the concept. It's that if you hide in a tumble dryer, it can kill you. We've seen it in the CSI episode of a few years ago. But at the same time, I would prefer not having to edit this and have a little bit more parenting going on.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
So they're more concerned about kids watching it at home and climbing into a dryer and killing themselves than they were when they released it theatrically. Because I guess they'll forget by the time they get home.
Apparently.
Yeah. Apparently. I like that.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's just stupid. I mean, if... Never mind. That's just ridiculous.
How's this? What, would you like some good news then?
Yes, please.
Still from Disney, though. Well, it concerns The Mandalorian.
Yes.
Which we like The Mandalorian.
We did.
Mandalorian Season 2, Michael Biehn is joining the cast.
Ooh, I like that.
Of Terminator fame. And so is Rosario Dawson, and she's joining as a live action version of Osaka Tano from it was the Star Wars Clone Wars TV series, I think, which was animated. So this is the first time we're getting a live action version of her, and it's by the person who voiced her in the first place. So that's brilliant. I'm just wondering, because I'll admit I have not watched the series. I've watched Mandalorian, not the one she came from. The Mandalorian takes place after Return of the Jedi, so I'm guessing Order 66 somehow missed Ahsoka. Do you watch the series? I don't know.
I do not watch the series, so I don't know. I thought I'd read that that character is going to be in The Mandalorian, but I don't know. That might have been something totally different. So I don't know. But yeah, those two actors, that's awesome. Really like
if you have answers to that, write us at go to the Cinema Savant's website. We have a
it's not coronavirus.
I've forgotten our email. Jeez, I am so not awake at the moment. My adrenaline is down. It's not like I'm being chased by anything. Like in this video game that is coming out that is based on a movie, and I think this is a brilliant idea, which is the only reason I'm mentioning it here. Next month, a game is coming out called Predator Hunting Grounds. It's coming out for the PS4, and it's based loosely on the original Predator movie, except, and I love this, you can play either as Arnold Schwarzenegger's group of whatever they were, guys with guns, and your objective is to go kill the same bad guys and then get to the chopper, or you can play as the Predator and go kill all of those people, which I think that's a cool idea.
That is a cool idea.
So, you know, something to look forward to, I guess, because there's a lot of stuff that we're not looking forward to as much.
That's
because
true.
Of this stupid virus.
You know, there are some other cool things to look forward to. Very cool movies coming out on Netflix, Amazon. Lots of stuff coming out. Starts April 1st. So
that's tomorrow. We were going to do an April Fool's episode, by the way. But we looked at, you know, things have actually are actually flipped at the moment. Because you used to look to comedy channels for comedy, and you look to the White House for everything that is factual. And now you look at the White House for comedy and comedy channels for things that are factual, which doesn't make a damn bit of sense.
It does not.
So let's travel back in time to when things did make sense and look at a movie that is actually based on historical events. So you know what? No spoilers in this, because it's literal history. Ford versus Ferrari. That's right. We've mentioned it for, 6 months now, and one of us finally got around to watching it.
Woo!
Although, I'm going to go ahead and say this. I think it might have been misnamed.
Really?
Because the concept of the movie is the feud Henry Ford II perceived between himself and Enzo Ferrari. And I know some of you are thinking, Rob, it's Ferrari Enzo. No, Enzo Ferrari is the guy who owned the company. The car is named after him. Anyway, judging from the way he's portrayed in the film, I don't think Enzo cared that much. All this feud was in Ford's head. A lot of the movie was actually more about the infighting between Ford, one of his attorneys, Leo Beebe, who you will want to beat the crap out of before this movie's done, car designer and former race driver Carroll Shelby, and current race car driver and mechanic Ken Miles. And they all have fights at some point. Shelby was played by Matt Damon, who was Jason Bourne, and Miles was played by Christian Bale, who was Batman. Now, is there a fight scene between the two? Yes, there is. Is it epic? No. It's actually rather hilarious because of something done by Miles's wife, Molly, who is played wonderfully by, and I apologize for mispronouncing your name, Catriona Balfi, I'm guessing. I could be wrong. I apologize for the two other names. That's one. There's another one coming up I'm going to botch too because I haven't heard it pronounced. Anyway, she should have gotten an Oscar nomination for this because she was brilliant. Absolutely love her. Now, was the movie great? I'm going to go with almost. I think two things stopped this from being a great movie, in my opinion. One of the big takeaways from the film is that money and corporate lawyers can always get what they want at the expense of the people who do the actual work. Now, this is historical. That really happens. It just still pisses me off because I was really hoping that either Shelby or Miles would punch the crap out of Leo Beebe at some point. Because he's a dick throughout the whole movie, and I wanted someone to even if they just accidentally run over his foot, just a little something. But they didn't. You've got the cars, fellas. Hit him. He's right there. No, you didn't do it. Fine. The other thing about this movie is that it's about 20 minutes too long, which is not something you hear about a movie very often if you think it's good. The film should have stopped after the Le Mans race because Batman and Bourne, Miles and Shelby ended the Le Mans race, which is what this whole thing is about, basically walking into the sunset. Mission somewhat accomplished, but that's not where they end it. Again, this is historical, so it's not a spoiler. Instead, this movie goes the extra step, showing Miles test driving next year's model race car and dying during a wreck with a test lap. And I knew that happened because, like I said, this is historical. But damn it, I was feeling good until that point. Instead, we get a scene with Damon and Miles' son, Peter, who is also played wonderfully by Noah Jupe. I just combined the two. That's what it was. And I apologize for mispronouncing your name too. And we get that scene where Shelby confronts the son of his dead friend. And is it touching and caring and it's tear-wrenching? And damn it, I was happy 20 minutes ago. Couldn't have left it there, could we? No. Because after this, we get some text on the screen about how Miles was put in the Motor Racing Hall of Fame. Duh. Shelby became a legend. Yeah, we knew that. Why couldn't we have just gotten the text about Miles' death, which wouldn't have hit us as hard, but would have left, we could have left the theater feeling happy or, watching it on TV like I did, whatever. I mean, I already knew that he didn't live long. I didn't realize it was that quick after. So I knew it wasn't going to end well, but you know what? Here's my advice for you. Watch this because the movie actually is really good. It was Oscar nominated, but I am so screwed up this morning. Oscar nominated in it.
There we go.
But here's the thing. When the Le Mans race is over and they're walking into the sunset, turn it off. Just stop it there. You'll feel satisfied you watched a good movie with a good ending because that was the good ending. And it should have stopped there. So yeah, Ford versus Ferrari. Good movie if you drop the last 20 minutes. How hard is that?
And that's not that hard. And it's long enough where, like you said, you've seen an entertaining movie. Stop right there.
Exactly.
Makes perfect sense.
Can't do that in the theater, but it's at home now.
That's true. Well, you can do that in theater. Just get up and leave. I've done that once in a movie theater. a movie that I did not watch at the theaters is the one I'm going to be talking about because the star is a character, is an actor I don't particularly care for. I don't think he's very good. It's not bad that he's just really pedestrian. I didn't say he was agonizingly bad. I just said I don't particularly care for him. Talking about Jason Clarke. He's a competent actor. He shows up in a lot of things. Not one of my favorites. If you saw Chappaquiddick, he's the guy who plays Ted Kennedy. Regardless, so I'm talking about Pet Sematary, a remake of a film which was based on a Stephen King novel. So for a little bit of background, the first one came out in 1989. It's not a very good translation of a Stephen King novel. Imagine that, because there are very few of them.
I would say, are there any?
Yeah. And sadly, Stephen King wrote the screenplay for that first version. And the problem with the first version isn't so much the plot, it's just the acting. The acting's awful. Dale Midkiff is the star. Ever heard of him? Nah. Good reason.
Yes. He was really good in a show called Time Tracks.
Well, of course you've heard of him. Denise Crosby. And I know you've heard of Denise Crosby, but seriously, Denise Crosby. So these are your stars. The biggest problem with Pet Sematary, and I'm sorry if I'm giving you spoilers for a movie that came out in 1989, but was the child. The basic concept of Pet Sematary is there's this weird Indian burial mound out there in the sticks of Maine. And when children lose their pets and they're sad, they would bury them in this little pet cemetery, hence Pet Sematary. But there's one further back that a few people had privy to, and they could reanimate the dead. And our happy little hero hears about this from a neighbor, Fred Gwynn, doing his outrageous Maine accent. And finds out, oh, he's like, okay, if you got something dead, it's like, you can bring it back. He kind of neglects to tell him that they don't come back the same. So he reanimates a cat. Cat's like horribly feral and nasty. Kid dies. He says, I want my kid back. He buries the kid. Kid comes back. He's reanimated, but now he's this horrible zombie corpse villainous creature. Problem is, they used a 4-year-old actor who, he's 4 years old. He ain't a good actor. You see this little 4-year-old kid attacking adults and managing to lay waste to them. And it's like, you have to have suspension of disbelief to get through this movie at all, right? Because of the concept. But a 4-year-old is like, seriously? Damian Wayne wasn't 4 years old. You know, it's just like, and the kid is trying to look scary and it's just comical. It's just a really, really bad freaking movie. So let's fast forward to 1989, to 2019. So they thought, hey, it's time to try this again. The stench of that first version has left everyone's nostrils. It's only been 30 years. Let's hit this one. So I was not remotely interested in it. And I finally saw, oh, it's on sale for rental. And by the way, I think it's on Netflix for free or Amazon Prime starting April 1st. So I should have waited. But surprisingly, much better than I expected. They made a few key changes on this. They changed the person who is killed. I'll just say that for now. That's all I'm going to say. But I will say they don't depend on a 4-year-old to convey the terror of the situation. Big difference, big help. Like I said, not a fan of Jason Clark, but he's significantly better than Dale Midkiff. The weird crotchety, he's not crotchety, but this overly helpful backwoods main neighbor is now played by John Lithgow. I really like Fred Gwynn. John Lithgow is a better actor. Plus, he doesn't lay on this thick as maple. Actually, maple syrup's not thick. He doesn't lay on this thick as maple tree bark accent. So that's better because that was just comical. So plot, guy's a doctor, has some crazy experiences, like a dead guy shows up and scares the hell out of him. And you can't really tell if it's the guy is really there or if this is just an apparition. But it's really gory and really graphic. So if you like your horror movies that way, yeah, you'll get plenty of gore in this one. Maybe not so much the quantity, but the quality is excellent. Very creepy. The set pieces, cat gets killed, cat comes back, cat's really nasty and evil. Yeah, that's all there. And again, sorry if I'm spoiling a 31-year-old plotline for you because it's 2020 now. A child is killed, the child comes back. This is much better done than it was in the 89 version because the actor is much more competent. And it's an interesting character. You actually get more involved in these people because the actors are better. So they are more interesting because you're more invested in them. That helps greatly. It's a Stephen King thing. So I'm not going to say how it ends because that would be a spoiler because let's say they updated it from the 89 version. Just be aware that if you know how Stephen King stories often end, then okay, that's not a spoiler. So I'm just saying it may not be a happy ending. It may be a happy ending. I'll say this. It all depends on your point of view, whether it's a happy ending or not. Much better than I expected. Right now, it has a massive 57 on Metacritic, which is not a good score, but it's got the original has a 38.
Well, 57 is a great steak sauce.
Yeah, 57 is a great steak sauce. On Rotten Tomatoes, we have a 58 score. For the remake, we have a 50, which is way too generous for the original. So this is one of the rare cases where a remake is an improvement. If you're going to watch Pet Sematary in the first place, just read the book. It's much better. But if you're going to watch it, watch the 2019 version of Pet Sematary. I was pleasantly surprised. If you like horror movies, yeah, I recommend it. I mean, could it have been better? Oh, hell yes, it could have been better. They could have had someone other than Jason Clark, who's really damn boring. But he's competent in this. He does a decent job. And that's about all I'll say about that. But Pet Sematary, so we both have kind of movies where it's like, yeah, this is good. But, you know, not quite what I was hoping. At least Pet Sematary wasn't nominated for Best Picture. I guess that's a good thing.
I would have been worried if it was nominated for Best Picture because... Damn, yeah. There's a lot of movies that they say are good. But that
there are
just,
a lot of movies that they say are good.
But there just aren't. You had a thing that you wanted to do.
I had a thing that I wanted to do, because since we're talking about April Fools, when we were discussing, it's like, this isn't really, we don't really get the feel for an April Fool kind of situation. But I thought, you know, there have been some directors and some producers who pulled April Fool's jokes on us, and maybe it's the critics, because I was originally going to do 5 movies, but then it turned out there's 3 that really stand out to me that are critically acclaimed that I just think are god-awful movies. So you'll see these on top 10 lists in a lot of cases. Oddly enough, these all came from 2017. That was not the purpose, but that's just how it worked out. So first up is A Ghost Story. Again, came out in 2017. Stars Casey Affleck and Rooney Mara, 2 very good actors. It's a meditation on loss. Okay, so right away, that's going to turn a lot of people off, which I understand that.
Ooh, I'm one of them.
Yeah, it is about a woman and her husband. It's about their relationship. The husband dies, but he can't leave. He just can't leave. So he stays in her life. He is represented by the classic child's costume of a bedsheet, white bedsheet with 2 holes cut out. I mean, seriously, that's how it is. And that's not the problem with the movie. That's not the problem with it. So he stays there and he observes her life. He observes her life moving on and how she deals with the grief. And I mean, this whole thing is about grief. You know, it's how people handle grief and how he couldn't handle his loss. So he stayed. She can't see him, by the way. This is just, nobody sees him. It's just, he's there. Now, I really do like deep, thoughtful movies. I mean, one of my favorite movies is My Dinner with Andre, which is about 2 playwrights just sitting and talking over dinner for like an hour and a half. So it's not like I am against profound films. This is not a profound film. This is a boring, god-awful, boring film. Imagine someone just coming to your house and filming just snippets of you doing the dishes, rearranging the furniture. And they just do this for, you know, they'll pop in for a few minutes and they'll come back in a month or so and do it again. That's what this is. Like, holy crap. You know, there are some emotional scenes, but it's like, I've seen emotional scenes in Bugs Bunny cartoons that are better. So no, A Ghost Story is not good at all. The next movie that I will talk about is, to me, was slightly worse than A Ghost Story. And by the way, it's A Ghost Story, not Ghost Story. Ghost Story, which is an excellent horror film. A Ghost Story, that's the one you don't want to see. Next one is The Meyerowitz Stories, in parentheses, new and selected, because, you know, we needed a really spiffy title. So this stars Dustin Hoffman, good job. Grace Van Patten also does a good job. Ben Stiller also does a good job. Adam Sandler. Now, the movie isn't terrible. It's okay, actually. It's better than A Ghost Story. My biggest problem with this is that Adam Sandler was singled out for his amazing performance and the depth of his range and just how wonderful he did. And Adam Sandler has conversations in the film, like normal people have conversations. And then occasionally, several times, he'll break into the angry Adam Sandler shtick that he's been doing for decades, where he screams at the top of his lungs. You know, if you've seen Anger Management, you've seen it. If you've seen any Adam Sandler movie, you've seen it.
I've unfortunately seen an Adam Sandler movie.
And I like Adam Sandler when he was early and funny. I really like The Wedding Singer. So it's not like I have this deep hatred for Adam Sandler. I really dislike the fact that he hasn't bothered acting for decades or tried to be funny. Well, let me put it this way. He tries to be funny, but he no longer knows what funny is, which for some reason happens to a lot of comics like this.
Tragic.
But it's just, oh, look, Adam Sandler's screaming. Wow, I haven't seen this for the past 30 years, and this is supposed to be acting? You know, it's an interesting story about families estranged, and they all get together to appreciate the work of their dad, who is Dustin Hoffman, who is this fabulously successful artist. And Adam Sandler isn't, so he's resentful. It's like, yeah, we've seen these kind of movies dozens of times, often done much better. So to me, the thing that really set me off about The Meyerowitz Stories is not that it's bad, it's just that it's very average. And the heaps of praise put on Adam Sandler for just like...
Being him
is like, clearly the critics who saw The Meyerowitz Stories and liked it hadn't seen much of Adam Sandler because it's the same shtick he always does. Oh my God. The last one. Wow. Okay.
American Idol, the movie.
If you ever make the mistake of watching this film, I beg of you, please watch A Ghost Story 10 times instead.
Oh dear.
Watch the Meyerowitz stories 20 times instead, because A Ghost Story it's bad. It's the praise is overblown. The Meyerowitz stories is not so much bad, but it's just the critical praise that was heaped on it that was overblown. Not really a good movie, but it's an okay movie. The Killing of a Sacred Deer, absolutely one of the worst movies I've ever seen. And I'm not going to talk about a lot of terrible movies, because a lot of terrible movies, everybody knows they're terrible. We get that. This movie, oh my God, I hardly know where to start with it. This is about a family. Has an excellent cast, by the way. Weird. IMDb lists the stars as Barry Bernson, Herb Calloway, Bill Camp. That's weird, because the stars are Nicole Kidman and Colin Farrell. So, yeah, I'm not sure why they... Oh, they're. That's why, because they're going in alphabetical order, because they're bizarre. So a surgeon performs an operation on a child. Child doesn't make it. Sad thing. We get that would be a sad thing. However,
then they bury him in this cemetery out behind where the pets go.
Oh my God, I wish they had, and the film with it. Unfortunately, they did not. So brother of the child is very upset about this. So he decides he's going to take vengeance on the family.
Uh-huh.
He worms his way in by being wonderfully helpful and kind, and works to split them apart to create havoc. And then it gets like really violent and crazy. That's all okay. That would have been interesting if it wasn't for the fact that for some reason, the director, Yorgos Lanthimos, and I'm sure you probably don't recall that name, but it's the guy who directed The Lobster, which is a strange film that I really liked. Dogtooth, which is a strange film that I really liked, and The Favorite, which is not that strange of a film, but a movie I really liked. So this guy has done excellent work. For whatever reason, he chose to have the actors, and again, I'm talking about Colin Farrell and Nicole Kidman, these people can act, to perform in the most wooden, deadpan readings possible. Imagine, picture the work that George Lucas did with the prequel trilogy, and how god-awful Natalie Portman was in that. It's as if he was channeling George Lucas, but George Lucas who was asleep or maybe comatose. Absolutely the worst performances you'll ever see by Colin Farrell, by Nicole Kidman, really by everybody in this, because it's just horrifyingly bad. And I understand that was his choice. I understand that's part of the message that he's conveying. I don't like the message. It's like, what the hell are you doing? It was painful to watch. I watched the whole thing because I wanted to see, where is he going with this? Will this ever change? No, it does not. I mean, it is literally like you had a very, very unimaginative five-year-old reading these lines. Because, I mean, there's like very little inflection, no emotion. And I that's the point. I get it. But my God, this would have been an interesting film. At least if it had been directed normally, like all his other films are. It's like, you want to do some experimental film, that's cool, because that's clearly what this is. And again, critics loved it, and it's like, what the hell were you watching? And The Lobster is, if you haven't seen The Lobster, very weird, also starring Colin Farrell. He's excellent in The Lobster because he's allowed to act. It is set in a future where if you don't fall in love, you don't partner up with someone, you're going to be turned into an animal. That's the premise of The Lobster. That's pretty weird.
That's a bit surreal.
That is a bit surreal. That is a bit weird and twisted. And it's an excellent movie because the concept is so bizarre. But the acting is great. The emotion is wonderful. The Killing of a Sacred Deer, absolutely the opposite. Oh my God. It is just, it's like a Saturday Night Live skit where they were trying to show you how we make a bad movie and it didn't work. I mean, holy crap. And so by far, this is the worst of the three movies. A Ghost Story, bad movie. The Meyerowitz stories, I don't know if it's a bad movie, but it's certainly not a good movie. And it's just dysfunctional families. Oh, my God. There are a dozen dysfunctional family movies there's probably some done on Hallmark today that are better. The Killing of a Sacred Deer, holy crap. I mean, it ranks up there with Pure Luck, which is the only film that I've ever walked out of a movie theater on. My God, that thing's an atrocity. But actually, you know, if Martin Short had been in The Killing of a Sacred Deer, it's like, maybe it would have improved it.
Ouch. You know, I'm trying to think, have we ever actually liked anything with Martin Short in it?
I have liked a few things of Martin Short in it. Father of the Bride with Steve Martin, okay. And Martin Short's funny. To me, Martin Short is one of those actors. Small doses, yes, awesome. Building a movie around him, oh God, please no. I cannot stand his cutesy, oh my God, I'm so funny and adorable. It's like, holy crap, dude, no, you're not. You never were.
I'm thinking Inner Space wasn't that bad, but everything else I've seen him in has been kind of, ugh.
Yeah, agreed. I agree, in Inner Space, it wasn't that bad, but it wasn't.
I'm not saying give him an Oscar for it.
But yeah, that's as far as the premise. Is there ever a movie that he's in that we liked? It's like, yeah, we like that movie. Father of the Bride, we like that movie. But Three Amigos, oh God, I cannot stand that movie.
I never understood I don't even understand the premise of that movie. It painfully hurts me almost as much as that American Idol thing I started the show with.
Almost, but not quite.
Almost. But now that we've come full circle, it seems like a good time to wrap up the show. So we're going to, I feel bad because I'm not able to do the end line that I've been doing because we've been doing this for what, 5-6 years now?
Something incredible like that, yes.
Yeah, and I've always ended the show the same until a couple of weeks ago, so the coronavirus has screwed it all up. So I'm going to do what Pornhub has told you to do.
Really?
There's something I've never said before. Stay home and watch a movie.
Captain, we're losing power in the warp engines.
I think we should be leaving now.
I'm going to go home and sleep with my wife.
And on that unusually harmonious bombshell, it is time to end.
I am very disappointed!
Man, we have a weird job.
It's shameful, but it's a living.
And like that, he's gone.
Darn, that's the end.